So today we're going to talk about program evaluation, which if you're in the community sector, if you're in the business of, you know, if you're in a not-for-profit agency other than church that that does programming and, you know, for a community, you already know that that's extremely important, that you need to be able to go back to the funder and say that the money was well spent. So that's one of the biggest reasons we want to do that. We also want to know, we do it because we want to know what worked and what didn't work. So we're going to talk about that. Well, tell me what kinds of projects you're involved in, and because I love to brainstorm with people about what maybe they could do in terms of measuring output. So where are you all? What's your names? Where are you from?
I'm John Melanie McQuaig, and we're from Wenatchee.
Oh, great.
And I'm actually congregation president at Grace Lutheran Church.
Oh, okay.
And so I was just curious about the evaluation of outreach programs. You know, get some things going on. Some things have been there a long time. And, you know, so.
Yeah, and I think every church is like this, and not just churches, lots of not-for-profits that we do things over and over, and they are, and maybe that's a good thing. Like I said, there's lots of different reasons why we engage in outreach. It's certainly to meet maybe a group of people's needs, but I think we don't always stop and take stock of, are we really making a difference? You know, and is this something we want to continue?
Well, our church participates in outreach activities. And the one that I really got involved in last year was the women's shelter, because we took a week where we staffed the women's shelter and provided snacks.
Oh, great.
But, you know, there's no money involved. There's no, you know, there was no grant or anything. But I'm involved in two other community activities that do rely on grants and contributions. Mm-hmm. And I know that, CASA, I don't know, in Washington I think it's called Guardian Ad Litem, but in Oregon it's called Court Appointed Special Advocates.
Right.
Is it CASA in Washington too? That's changed since I left. Okay, so we have to report our, every month we have to report how much time we spent on our kid, whether it was in court or visiting with the kid or visiting with the people affecting the kid, foster parents, whatever. And I know that that data is used to report to back to the grant, the grant people that provide us with our funds. And the other thing is, I'm on the board of the Humane Society.
Oh,
just missed the board meeting on Wednesday, but that also relies. She writes grants for that all the time,
mm-hmm.
and our executive director is always doing grant solicitation. And legacies, and we have to keep our work out in front of the community. So the city will keep giving us their pittance, and they determine how we run our program, you know, and they provide about 10% of our budget. So,
okay, so
we do have to meet their expectations.
Yeah. So people are involved in what?
And there are other people from our church here who might be more knowledgeable about our outreach.
Okay.
One other person.
Just here.
Okay, great.
Curious about what
just curious. Church,
what defines an outreach program?
Oh,
church.
Okay. And I'll try not to get too researchy on you. So, Jeff, and I know
I'm from Prince of Peace Lutheran, and we have the tutoring program and community dinner.
Yeah.
That's mainly those two things that I'm interested in.
So the tutoring program is just like right for. Mm-hmm. But my area is kids as they go through looking at outcomes down the road, preventing certain outcomes down the road, and enhancing others. So, okay. And Mary Ellen?
From Episcopal Church, and we just do hands on going to other organizations. So, we do the food bank once a quarter, and then we cook a dinner for the transitional housing for homeless vets once a quarter. So, that's. You know, we're always looking for other things, but, you know, we donate socks to Operation Night Watch and school supplies, and then we do have a reading with Helke program.
Okay. What's the reading program?
It's, we go to a school once a week, and kids feel more comfortable reading to a dog, so Elke is our therapy dog, and so three people take different students each week, and they read to the dog.
That's great.
I'm kind of on the periphery of the outreach ministry. I'm on a, what we call a communications committee, and we coordinate all the media activity.
Oh, nice.
And work with current members, keeping them up to date on what's going on, and getting them motivated, hopefully. Potential members, trying to bring in new members, new people, and help them understand what they would have to come into our church and the community, create awareness of what we're doing.
This is Steve Britt.
Okay.
Ostensibly, I'm a member of St. Mark's Cathedral. There's a lot of us up here. And I'm also...
In Seattle?
And I'm kind of the head of our Labyrinth Committee. We don't do much except set the Canvas Labyrinth out a couple times a year. So a lot of my Labyrinth work is freelance. I have to make new friends around different congregations within the diocese and elsewhere. So, I'm a... So I guess in that regard, my outreach is me, you know. I mean, it's a ministry that I do, not just with churches, but with different organizations. And as long as my personal expenses are met, it's a ministry. And I do that also. I'm an actor as well, and I do that with an adapted book that is, everything is from the perspective of a gentleman who spent time in Tent City 3. And so congregations that are getting ready to host Tent City 3 or 4, often they know about my work with this material, so I will bring it and help educate the community.
Do you do A View from the Tent?
Yeah.
Oh, how cool.
That's me.
So, I have heard that.
Okay. I guess I've seen you.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, that's it.
And so my outreach is very, very guerrilla in that regard.
Educational and...
Yeah. And then I guess if I do anything corporate, it's with a group. I sing also with the Total Experience Gospel Choir, who was here 3 years ago, just about this time 3 years ago.
Oh.
And so we go a lot of different places. So it's funny that none of that is related to my home, what I call my home church, but I'm still out there. So.
Well, that's great. Yeah.
Well, that's another one of our outreach programs, because we have a grass labyrinth that Dan designed, and it's mostly people, random people from the community that come in and use it rather than members of the congregation.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, and that's something where you're not, we're going to talk about different kinds of measurements, but so now we're on the end here, evaluation. We go ahead and go to the next one. So sometimes I don't want you to feel like you have to have these elaborate measurements in place for everything you do, because sometimes we just do things because they make sense and they're, they finish a need, like, certainly educational stuff. See, now, as a researcher, I would want to measure, baseline and after and how people react to that and so forth. But you also have to use some common sense with this. And you can get very elaborate and it can get expensive. But I think yesterday when we talked about getting money, if you're on a grant, you really have to show the funder that you've used their money wisely. So you have to have some kind of measurement in place to show how you've made a difference. So why do we perform them? And so I think sometimes it's really good for us to, as a congregation, or whatever your organization is, to sit back and say, what worked, what was effective, and what wasn't. And it always slays me when, I don't know if your church is like this, but my church we're up by Crossroads in Bellevue. We're very close to Microsoft, and we have tons of software engineers and Boeing engineers, and engineers are wonderful, but it seems like we always want, and this is also human nature, everything kind of laid out perfectly before we embark on something, and all the questions answered, and really, when you think about it, how could we possibly, sometimes you have to implement something, and so in research, we just call that a pilot, and you could too, or community outreach, where you're going to try something out on a small scale and see what worked and what didn't. And then when you apply for funding, you can say, well, you can use that as data for, we know this worked, or we did this on X number of people, we had so many people, and then we realized we needed to alter it. So what pieces were effective? And resources, I think
evaluating whether or not we were using our resources wisely. So how much time and energy went into it, not just money, but volunteer hours and so forth. We talked about this as we did our internal assessment on Tuesday, of taking stock of how much energy are we putting into something, and is it effective? You know, where are we spending our time and energy? And we did some, if anybody's interested, I can send you my slides from Tuesday. You can find me on the Seattle U website, and I'm happy to email you things. But so this helps you, if you're keeping track of money spent, time and energy expended, of your staff and other resources, your space, just to give you an idea of how you're using those and is it a good use of resource. It helps you to clarify the program objectives, hopefully. If you keep those end results in mind, you've got your program goals in mind, and then you're trying to evaluate whether you're meeting them, it helps you clarify whether or not are they realistic. You know, we thought, hey, we're going to, for the people that go through our shelter that we're feeding, we're going to refer so many into, you know, long-term housing or whatever. For homeless, I think the ultimate goal is always to get people into permanent housing. So that's an outcome measure. So are those goals realistic that you've set for yourself? Because you realize, boy, this is way more complicated than we thought. So then you reset those when you get some experience. It really assists you to communicate the benefits to the public and potential partners. If you know where you're effective or how your ministry is effective, it's going to help you get more people involved, more resources, and so forth. So the more clearly you can communicate what you're doing and how and the positive benefits of that, I think it really helps you to grow that ministry or decide your going to dump it. We talked about that painful thought on Tuesday that sometimes we need to let go of things. And it assists other organizations, hopefully, to develop similar programs. So when we talked about going out for funding, I really encourage people to look at similar programs and say, we know this worked over here. Maybe it's another city or just another area where you live, and to say, we're going to adapt that to us, but we know we're a little bit different in this way. And so we're going to adapt it and try it out this way. And of course, for funders, we want to show that we spent the money, that we did what we said, and it provides evidence for future funding. Yesterday we talked about funders like to fund continuing successful programs quite often. Go ahead. So the types of evaluation you can do are process, we talked about, what pieces worked and didn't work. Sometimes we intentionally do a pilot program so that we can test something out. But process to me is an extremely important piece of any program or research that I do. And depending upon the program, we had a young lady in here yesterday who was trying to implement some kind of a, it sounded to me, it was sort of in the formative stages, so she wasn't able to articulate all of it, but it was with kids, trying to get them to take on a project and maybe show some leadership skills over the year. And so, where was I going with that? She had some, gosh, my brain just totally went blank on that. I'm sure I'll remember in a minute. Oh, the process. I was telling her that as she goes through, and this is really typical, you find that things work or don't work, you want to keep really clear notes, meeting minutes and so forth. You may even want to have a protocol that you use to implement something so that when you change in a couple of months because you realize, well, that didn't work very well, that you're able to go back and identify what you did in the first place, particularly if you have to make an annual report to a funder or quarterly report. You'll get to the end of the year and you'll say, you'll look back at the grant, because a year goes by quickly, and you'll say, oh, we said we were going to do this. Now, here, I know we had really good reasons for veering off of that path, but what was it? So as you write your report, you're really going to want to have some documentation of that. But also, sometimes you get drift. Especially we have volunteers coming and going. And so if you have protocols in place where you can give them to volunteers,
you can keep everybody sort of on track. And then if you change them, it's intentional, not because somebody comes in and they say, well, I think a better way to do this is this way. Now, it depends. Sometimes that's just fine. We can approach things in a multitude of ways. Serving meals, it's not like we all have to do it exactly the same way. But with a young lady yesterday where they're doing this education and partnerships with kids, they want it to be somewhat intentional and consistent, so at the end, the measurement really means something, their baseline to the end of the year, so that she can show the funder that what they did worked. If they deviate too much without control over that, they're not really going to know what worked and what didn't. So for that project, it needs to be a little bit more intentional. Short-term effects versus long-term. So the short-term sometimes is, you know, very quick. Like, so a kid, a reading program, you know, you might get a very fast short-term turnaround where a child is engaged quickly in reading. And then at the end of the year, or the end of 6 months, how far has that kid advanced? You know, so you have something in place that actually measures that, perhaps in the classroom. So that's an example of a short-term and a long-term outcome. And sometimes in research, we get a quick, you know, immediate effect from something, but is it sustainable over the long term? So we look at that and we say, yeah, we got an immediate reaction from this. And I'm in human behavior, which is very, you know, very sticky. It's not like test tube bench science. And so, you know, we do something that we hope will change people's health behavior or something. And maybe we get that short-term effect, but then 6 months down the road, people, you know how that is. We say we're going to lose weight and something like that. And for 2 weeks, we do well after we read something or go to a class or go to the doctor, and then it goes away. So those, sometimes it may or may not apply to what you're doing, but I would like to think of short-term and long-term outcomes that I'm measuring. And particularly when you're dealing with people are very complex. So we don't want to have just one measurement in time. We want to look across, you know, 2 or 3 years, I think, to really know, at least I do in my work, to really know if I've made a difference. Because it doesn't mean much to have that just one measurement in time when it comes to people. We're just too complex in our behavior. And then formative evaluation is really how satisfied are people with our program. And that's sometimes the only kind of evaluation you might want to do. Besides the process, I think for our work in churches, it's, you know, do people like it? Are they coming? Is it, so getting that feedback from the people who are participating is very important. And then a summative is looking at all the evaluation results that you have at the end. So this probably sounds kind of overwhelming for like, oh my gosh, I am not going to do all this. But go ahead to the next slide, and I'll try and do a little exercise with you to break it down. So as I said, we're going to want to look at some of the measurements, our resources, what are we using, the activities to produce the output. So is it productive? And I think sometimes that's just a judgment. So it's, you know, all the people and activities that go into producing the outputs, recruitment, interviews sometimes, the preparation for classes, the you know, recruitment of volunteers. Sometimes we do baseline assessments and so forth. And then the outputs is frequently what we measure. And so I guess the only take-home message for everyone today, I think, is to try not to think only in terms of outputs. Outputs are very important. The number of labyrinths that you design, not the number of labyrinths, but probably the number of people that enjoy them. And I don't know if that's possible to measure unless you're sitting out there watching. But so it's kind of unrealistic probably to measure that. But the number of kids that you assist, you know, reading, the number of meals that you serve, those are very important statistics to report. But I think that's where we usually stop in our evaluation. So the only thing I'm trying to do today is, I'm not trying to make you all researchers, but just to think about what other kinds of things, and maybe it's just one, because you don't want to go crazy with this, because you don't want to make an impossible process for yourself, because we're all volunteers, right? So I would never do something super complex in my church work. only as a researcher, where it's part of my job. So I want to make that really clear, that don't feel like you have to do a whole bunch of complicated research. But try to think beyond the outputs. And then we talked about outcomes and the effects a little bit already.
Okay. Yes. Yes. I've been thinking about, on the resources, I think it would be a good idea if you're going to measure resources like facility use and staff time, to make sure those people know in advance.
Yes. Yes.
So they're not surprised at the end when you ask the
right
administrative staff, you'll have to finish for me.
Yeah, thanks so much for bringing that up. That's exactly right. When we set up a project, the evaluation, and if you do a grant proposal, you must include a section on how you're going to evaluate it from the get-go. And you're right, you need to set that up ahead of time. And the other piece that is really important is try to build on whatever majors are already there. I mean, try to make it as easy as possible for yourself. So that's a great point. If you're going to be looking at what percentage of time staff do for something, which could be a real, a little bit of a pain for them to do, try to make it easy for them. Tell them ahead of time and say, you know, just at the end of the week, give your best guesstimate as to what percentage of your, how many hours you spend on this. So it's not maybe just super precise. We want to make it easy on people. And the bookkeeper as well. And that's usually, the money is not the hard part. It's the hours and effort. So this is kind of a, this is Dare Mighty Things is a they have a great website, I thought, for looking at evaluating programs. But you really want to think, does it make sense in relation to what you're intending to measure? So some things are just very easy, like number of guys and women that end up in permanent housing. I mean, that's our ultimate goal. So that totally makes sense. So the measurement is really makes sense in terms of the indicators. But sometimes it's a little bit more difficult. So yesterday this young lady was having a very hard time deciding what was it that was going to be different at the end of the year about these kids. So we were brainstorming a little bit about maybe leadership skills or, you know, critical thinking skills. And you can measure those. There are tools out there. So for her, because she's going for a grant, she's a graduate student, it's probably worth it for her to go to that effort. But for, and for reading, you know, as we were saying, maybe if they're probably already doing testing in the classroom. Mm-hmm. So to ask the teacher, you know, because you want to continue with that, and say you were going to get grant funding to help with that, to ask the school ahead of time, can you tell us for the kids that participated in that, not any names, just in general, are they making progress, you know, from beginning to end of year in some way? Because schools are usually already measuring stuff. If I was a researcher, I'd just try to tag onto those. But then you have to go through the internal review board and so forth to do that. So you ask, you know, what are people already measuring? And if you're partnering with agencies, they probably have some measures in place that you can use. You know, so, and are your indicators, you know, measurable or observable? Like I said, you know, it'd be great to know how many people use a labyrinth, but is that really realistic? Is it, can we could have somebody, you could do some random sightings and say, we could design an experiment if we put our mind to it, which is what I love to do, you know, and then you could maybe generalize, like look for an hour on different days and times of the week and then generalize that somehow if you were really interested. But 24 hours a day is not really, you know, going to probably cut it.
It's anecdotal, but we have a book out there where people can record, okay. And we ask them to record if they've written it, walked it, which most of them don't. But
yeah,
you do get some real concrete feedback that reinforces the guy I call our meditating mower, because he's the one that mows it and maintains it. So he sees his measurement of outcome is the feedback he gets from the people who write in the journal.
Oh, that's perfect. That's wonderful. And then he probably kind of knows the times of day that are best to mow, so he doesn't disturb them. Oh, that's really great. Okay, so that's a great example of, and you made it kind of easy on yourself to put the book out there. So it must be undercover. It's not the way. Oh, that's neat. This makes me want to have a labyrinth at our church. You have a lot of fun.
Talk to me.
You built that? Okay.
I'm
serious. Well, ours started from a Lenten exercise that we were just going to have for the week, and it's been there for 4 or 5 years now. After the week, we decided the grass started growing, and the guy that said it has to be wide enough for a lawnmower to fit through said, you know, we could maintain this, and so it's a lot less expensive than people who get paving stones and put ones in. It just takes a dedicated mower.
Okay.
That's a great way to generate interest, I think, before you go to the expense of doing it.
Yes. Interesting. Okay. Yeah, and it would be so cool that, I hate to go off on so many outcomes on that. You choose the people that use it, and I don't know. You know, you just let your imagination go wild, which is why I love research. But as I said, is it reasonable that you can collect data on the indicators? Good evaluation is in these big projects that you see that go over time, where they follow groups of kids around the country, for example. Like there was a big study that one of my colleagues was involved in years ago looking at daycare and outcomes of kids who were in daycare. And it was a multi-site study around the U.S. and followed them for years. So the evaluation piece of that, because it's longitudinal, is quite expensive. So is it reasonable that you can collect data on the indicators? Okay, go ahead. Is it within your resources? So that your eyes are not just rolling back in your head, I wanted to have more of a concrete example, and this is from Congregations for the Homeless, and that I brought up again because I've talked about them throughout the week because our church is so involved in it, and one of the founding members is from our church. And so I wanted you to look at the mission. So this is basically their goals. This is what they want to do. They want to help end homelessness in the East King County. So they want to end homelessness, which means that they want to get people into permanent housing. We do this by assisting men successfully make the transition from homelessness to permanent housing. So, go ahead. So then on their website, what's kind of interesting is they say, we think the stories are what really tells it for us. And I think that's a good form of evaluation, too, to have some personal stories from people. So if you were writing up a report, again, we talked about using those in a grant proposal, but I think in an evaluation it's great, too, to have some personal stories. But they said, we know some people want statistics. So they have this paragraph of statistics. So they say, this is their 2010. We were able to serve 127 different men in our shelter and provided, so this is where they really count up the outputs, 10,000 bed nights, 32,000 and some meals, and these are all their volunteers. They're not ours, but it's very impressive the number of volunteers they have in this, from 12 host congregations and 31 support congregations, so it's a huge effort. And now they've started out providing temporary housing, and this has grown over the years to where they have case management, and they've also provided dental procedures now. Nurse volunteers they've added, and they found jobs for 22 men. So out of those 127, that's less than 20%. 20 men attended our Bible studies, and we were able to place 68 men in housing, which they say is 73% of the men who left the shelter. Now, one of the things I want to ask you is, I'll finish. This brings the total through, I don't know why they have this here. So if you're doing
maybe
your...
Maybe since 2006.
Oh, since...
I know it says through, but...
Yeah, because I just copied and pasted this off the internet, so I didn't retype it. Through 2006, to 252 men who have left life on the streets for for permanent housing. It must be since 2006, because they started in 2005 or somewhere around there. So go to the next slide, because I have some. So what I want you to think about is, what are the outputs? What are the short-term outcomes? What are the long-term outcomes in that? But what else might you want to see measured? So you're the one that's funding this, let's pretend. You're the funder. You've given them a bunch of money. They get money from all over the place, but we're just pretending we're Robert Wood Johnson or something, or the Gates Foundation. So let's go back to that slide so that you can look at this. So what are the outputs? Those are pretty easy to identify.
I think it'd be interesting to know a year later, were the men still off the street?
Yes. Yeah. So what was that long range following those men? Were they still able to maintain housing? And it sounds like, I find this kind of confusing the way they've written this. I've got to tell this to Nadine. I don't know if she'll want to hear this.
We can blame it on us.
Yeah, but I'm not exactly sure as I sift through this exactly what it means. So that's a good example. We want to be really clear as we're reporting.
What was this permanent housing? Where was it? Who ran it?
Well, and I've taken a blip out of this. They have, I think, a variety, but you're right. Where it's, they have actually purchased some houses or rent. My understanding of this is that they have a guy who lives with four or five men in a house, so that, because, you know, life skills are a big, and they gave away one of the things I was going to say. They have life skill coaches. And so that's one of the things, you know, if you've not successfully rented or made it down, you know, put down your first month's rent, and all those things that we take for granted, you don't have a checking account or anything. So they have a guy that stays with them to kind of keep them on track. And I think they must remain sober. I know when they're in the transitional housing in the churches, they must be sober. That's one of the conditions. And so I'm assuming that that may continue for this. But yeah, you bring up a good question about, you know, what long term, what happens to these guys? So keeping track of that. What else is confusing, or what else would you want to know?
If I was a funder, I'd want to see some dollars.
Yeah.
And there's no dollars reflected. I don't know if the meals cost $20 a piece, or they cost $1.50, or the annual budget was $300,000 or $4 million, you know, for this. And so I guess I'd want to see some. If I'm writing the checks, I'd want to see how the money was used.
Yeah, you definitely want to see how the money was used. It's a huge volunteer effort, and the food is donated, but yeah, I think I'm not exactly sure what all they pay for. They do have some paid staff now, and they have an office. It's amazing how this thing has grown in such a short time, but yeah, good point.
Would you also want to know the potential number of homeless you've actually reached in that area? Is it 10% you've reached?
Yeah, that's a great, What kind of impact are we making on the general population? And this is the east side, so I live on the east side, you know, Bellevue, which people don't often think about as having homeless, but we certainly do have them. So, but not as many maybe as downtown Seattle. So in the big picture, where does that fit? Is this like 50% or 10%? Yeah.
And also, how long does it take, you know, especially for other agencies or other organizations wanting to replicate it? So how many nights does it take for someone to, from coming in? I'm sure it varies by person, but, you know, is it a year commitment that you need to make to someone to transition them, or is it 6 months, or, because we have 10,000 bed nights, but
yeah,
what is that from arrival to independent living?
Yeah, on average, that's a great one. How long has it taken to transition someone into permanent housing and a job? I'm also wondering, this seems like a low number, 22 men that have found jobs. So
I don't know. It just seems a little, you know, 20%. But I don't, again, I have that overall comparison with other, maybe that's really great compared to other programs. It would be nice to have some comparison data.
You might want to have some pre-treatment data and post-treatment. Well, I've got the post-treatment there, but,
yeah.
You know, who are these men? You know, are they vets? Are they people who have lost their homes to foreclosure, which doesn't have families in it, but you know, how employable were they, or are they?
Yeah, it makes you wonder when you see that low number. Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see a funnel. If you had the kind of the total homeless population in East King County, and then you come down to 252 men who, you know, sort of touched our door, and then so many got down here to jobs, to permanent housing, and then how they sort of, what they lost along the way.
Yes.
And so if, yes. You know, 20 were sort of got out of the system because they couldn't quit drinking or whatever, it'd be interesting to see kind of how that funnel works for that.
Right, and then that would lead you to that sort of process evaluation about how, mm-hmm. you know, what worked and what didn't work. Looking at, okay, so we have all this, some of the successful cases, but what happened to the ones where we didn't mm-hmm. succeed, and what could we have done differently? And I think over the years they've added services as a result of that. I don't know firsthand how they're evaluating, if they're just focusing more on the outputs, but that's a great one. You guys are a great research team.
kind of along with that.
Yeah.
There were obviously men who left the shelter without going into permanent mm-hmm. housing. So it would be interesting to know and helpful to know, well, why else are they leaving Congregations for the Homeless
yeah.
housing?
Yes. Why? Is it because they couldn't remain sober or whatever? Yeah. They just got real discouraged.
So are they falling out, you know, or are they on their own somehow, you know, moving on or...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's confusing to me. 68 men, which was 73%, so which is like 50% about of the number that they served. So there's a 23% that left without us knowing why they left.
Yeah, and I imagine they know. And
yes.
In defense of them, this is their website where they're wanting to present their best stuff.
Yeah.
But it stimulates a lot of thinking about what we want to know, both as you go forward for funding, and the funders look at how well you've been doing, and do I want to fund this, and then your annual report back to the funder and to others,
and also
that put their efforts in.
For getting volunteers.
Yeah, right.
Because my church is one of those support congregations.
Yeah.
And you know, if you're trying to generate interest in other congregations in supporting this effort with volunteers,
absolutely.
You know, you want the best,
yes.
best view
yeah.
of what's happening.
Yeah,
and that just says the number of volunteers. It doesn't say how long they worked or what the quality of their work. I mean, the quantity of the work,
yeah.
and
yeah.
maybe the quality. You know, were they counselors? Were they cleanup people?
Yeah.
Did they prepare food? Did mm-hmm. they just sit up all night because you have to have somebody awake all night long?
Yeah.
Yeah,
and as you, and they do provide, you know, as you were kind of saying, in defense of that, they have other information probably on the website, and certainly to their supporting congregations, they provide all kinds of information about, you know, these would be your duties if you, you know, chose to serve meals for a week or, you know, whatever.
And making comparisons too to other programs, you'd want to know what the total cost in dollars and resources to get those 252 men off the street.
Yeah, it'd be interesting per man what you spend in resources.
Although I think you have to be careful. I think sometimes, especially governments, too concerned with the success rate, in which case you could improve your statistics if you went after the ones that were most likely to go to housing, but maybe even those that left were impacted. So it'd be good to know what kind of impact it had for those that left to just feel that they were cared for even for a short time.
Yes, and that would be kind of tough to measure, but you could
put some anecdotal information in there. You can see where you could just really keep going with this about what do we want to know, and as if you were thinking about donating some money, you know, if you went to a dinner, or donating your time, or getting your church involved is one of the congregations that hosts it. I know we do it one out of those 12 months a year.
The other thing I think would be interesting, especially for getting support, is what difference did this make in the life of the volunteers? Because it's not always about the people being served, but we are changed when we serve.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Yeah.
That would kind of have to be anecdotal, really.
It would. Yeah. I mean, that's my objection to evaluations.
Yes.
That it's sort of like setting goals, too. Sometimes in the effort to make it measurable, we get stuff, but it's not what's critical. Like, a goal frequently is we produce X number of widgets, but it doesn't talk about the quality of the widgets, because that's harder to evaluate. So the quality of the interactions is really sometimes as important as getting them into permanent housing.
Yes, and I don't know if you're absolutely right, and this is, and so that I think the best research is that I love quantitative stuff. I'm a numbers kind of person, but that intersection of the numbers and the qualitative research, I think, is extremely helpful. So to take some of that rich, those stories, and compile them, I'm actually learning how to do. I have a colleague who's a real expert in that, and so the intersection of those is excellent. And I don't know if you've been to Lee Wimberly's talks this week about the gap between science and religion, but he was talking the other day about the, you know, that we sort of ignore or overlook or filter out data in science. And there's a bench scientist in the room who was very offended by that. You know, no, we do rigorous science, we're right. But one of the examples I said later to Lee that I thought of is drug research, where it's numbers, and you get these huge sample sizes, so you can show a statistical difference pretty easily when you have in thousands of bunny rabbits or then people that are using the drug. But we don't, in the past, this has actually changed. FDA now requires this, but in the past, we have not looked at quality of life. Okay, so statistically this drug works. It changes the blood level a little bit. It keeps the blood pressure down a little bit or whatever. But what about the patient? Does it really help with their quality of life? What is it actually like to take that drug? Is it miserable? Because, that was not required to get a drug through the FDA until pretty recently. They now require that drug companies do some quality of life measures. So I told you, you've really got to have a mix. On the other hand, if you go to, this was a wonderful brainstorming, but I would want to caution, you want to make it doable for yourself and realistic. Katie Geisberg, she's a friend from our church, she's up here volunteering. So she came yesterday, and afterwards she's like, she's got this project in the Congo. She's one of the most inspirational young ladies I've ever met. She's 19, she's going to, save the world. And I mean, and she's doing it one step at a time. So she's raising money. She raised a bunch of money this last spring for women in the Congo to buy chickens, pigs, and so forth. And we know that makes a difference, especially with women. If you if they have, we know that affects the whole family. That men get the money and they, sorry guys, but go out maybe get drunk or whatever. But women invested in the family and their children, and the kids go to school, etc. So they want to give these women chickens, pigs, and so forth in this village. So she's like wanting to get money. So she came yesterday, we talked about grants, and we were talking at dinner, and she says, how do I measure that? So we started brainstorming about outcomes, and so she's not even there. She has contacts. So my first question was, I said, of course, as a nurse, I think of the nutritional status of the kids. Is it better? So I think of growth and development curve, so height and weight. But I said, she said there's a village doctor there or somebody. I said, if you have a contact, find out what they're already measuring, because you're not there. Make it easy. you know, so that you can make a case. You've already, if you could compare and contrast the families that you've already given the goats and chickens to and so forth or whatever, I know it's chickens and some other livestock, I can't remember, then how, you know, how are those kids doing versus the other kids? Or how's this village doing compared to another? But you've got to make it as easy as possible. Look at, you know, think about what do you want to change and how are you going to measure that? And pick something that's already going on. I think that's all I have in terms of slides. Is there another ministry that someone wants to throw out? So how do I measure this in the last few minutes we have? That you can think of, that you're puzzled over.
Well, one of the things that I just, that we do is we have a float in the Christmas parade and we hand out cards inviting people to church. And we also have now in our church, what does Randy Joss do? He's a producer.
He's a television.
Okay. Anyway, he does ads for our church during, is it Christmas or when?
Christmas.
Oh. And he donates all of this. I mean, it's a huge amount of airtime that we get.
Oh, how nice.
And he donates it. But we don't know how effective it is.
Yeah.
And so that's a piece that we're missing.
You know, and well, you know, marketing, I actually, you know, I'm a master's in business, so marketing, I mean, it's always hard to measure, you know, those blanket, you know, you do all those television ads and, I think people are always struggling with how did it get someone to actually buy the product. So, you know, and of course they do those, how did you hear about us surveys or how did you come about that?
You could even add that to your guest book.
Yeah.
You know, how did you hear about us?
Sometimes we have to tackle and say we found this book.
Right. We kind of gave up on our...
They don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Until they like the church, but if they come at first,
they don't want to feel like you're
going to come online for 3 hours some meeting.
We do get a lot of anecdotal stuff where somebody will say, "I saw your church on TV last night. How do you get such good coverage?"
That's probably from other churches.
It is.
That's fantastic.
And I know other studies say the most frequent reason people give for coming to church is because someone invited them.
Not because they picked up a postcard in my parade
or saw an ad on TV, but you may be planting seeds.
That's right.
Yeah. This fellow is a member of your church.
Mm-hmm. He's on the communications committee.
So right. you would hate to say we're not going to do that anymore. I mean, you're probably not, right? You're not going to say no, we're not going to do that. I mean, it's such a gift.
It wants to do it.
And you are planting seeds, you know. You never know how long it takes.
So I don't know.
If we do all of that and we get one family that comes and our church makes a difference in that couple and those two children and those two children's two children, you know,
it's probably worth it.
I would say that.
Right. I agree with you. And that's where we're not a business. We're not producing widgets in church. So the same rules, just I don't think, you know, we can use them as models, but they don't always apply. So I think that's really cool. And people, you know, you may have some offshoots, positive things with other partners in the community that hear of your church and go, you're the church that I hear on the radio. We want to partner with you to do outreach in this area. You never know what could come of that. You might just be getting members. But.
Or you might even be getting an occasional member to come more frequently.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's where I go to church.
A reminder. Or I got to write my check out. That would be a good one.
I've been thinking about, just in terms of measuring, your young friend, your 19-year-old friend, one thing, if they're keeping track of how often people in the village are going to the doctor now, well, what if she gets the money, then how often are they going to the doctor later? I mean, that should be too hard to track. Mm-hmm. And similarly here, maybe not as many guys moved to, you know, permanent housing as we might have hoped or whatever, but those that did, well, what are the social services that they are not using anymore? If they're more stable, maybe they're not going to the emergency room as often or whatever, the cost to society, there's a benefit there. Let's not forget to track that. If they're self-sufficient, well, they're not a drain. What was that drain? How are we saving? So there's money right there. I just put down on the postcard, our budget is always easy to justify to Congress because we save lives and assets. We save more than they spend on us to go do it, you know. So
yes,
there's that element that I don't think we should forget about.
It can be tricky to measure, and that's what I'm hoping to measure in the Lake City project I'm involved in, where we want to do respite care, is then not having those homeless people, you know, who are discharged to the streets. We want to have a safe place for them to recover, and not having to go back, drop into the emergency department, or get readmitted. So estimating those costs, you're right, it's a huge saving. It also saves lives. We've had a couple of guys die on the streets or in the car.
Yeah. It's always tricky to measure what didn't happen.
Yes,
avoidance,
it is.
Cost
it is.
Avoidance.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, we've got our accountant here to pull you in on that.
But one of the things that struck me is they're again encouraging people to volunteer, is that measuring have to be anecdotal, but those people that volunteer or the stuff, you know, we've done these projects, why have you done it? What have you gained? So that we encourage more people to volunteer. Because mm-hmm. there's always more workers needed in the field.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, we in our providing food last year, one of the suggested items for us to bring was tuna casserole. And I made tuna casserole for 30, I think, which was outside of my normal cooking environment, because we're usually serving 90, I think, between 80 and 90,
yeah.
I think. I can't remember the numbers for sure. Maybe it's only 30. Is it 30?
I think it's 30 for the homeless
congregation. Okay, yeah. Okay, I'm
homeless.
Confusing
yeah.
it with Tent City, I guess.
Yeah, with your...
Anyway, yeah. We
you're doing too many things.
Yeah. Anyway, so I was fixing the tuna casserole for 30 people, for 30 men. And I was amazed at how many came back for seconds and thirds and said, oh, this is so good, you know. And it was tuna and noodles and, you know, cans of soup. But it was something that they were just thrilled with. And their comments back.
Yeah.
Gratifying.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah, so if you reported that, someone else might want to make tuna casserole next time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm aware of the time, and I don't want to keep you from lunch, but I thank you very much. This is a great conversation and gave me lots of good ideas. I hope it gave you some ideas as well. Thank you.
Oh. I might just add real quickly, one of the things when I was in charge of our tutoring program, that each month I tried to put something in our monthly newsletter as just a little anecdotal story, a little success story. You know, this
yes.
child commented, you know, such
yes.
and such, or, oh, I like reading now, or, you know, or the teacher's report was, you know, this child is now. But just a little short article.
Yeah.
And the people, the members of our congregation often commented, oh, it was so nice to hear, you know, to you know, just know that little bit.
I think
success
that's great.
Program.
That internal.
But trying to keep them involved in the program, you know, the members of the congregation. But they did like the anecdotal stories, the little success stories, I think. So.
And people like to think that their time and effort is well spent.
Yes.
So it's like, oh, wow, I'm making a difference.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great point. Well, thank you very much.